This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ken Miller and I'm the director of the Survivorship Program at the Yale Cancer Center. I'm here in the WCIC studios with my colleague and co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, who's the chief adult oncologist at Yale. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken. Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of providing you with most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. here on this station, WTIC News Talk 1080. Our Healthline program features some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut.
Each week, Ed and I will be joined by a different expert from the Yale Cancer Center. Together, we'll discuss the myths about cancer, the latest treatment available to people with cancer, and advances in clinical research. Our goal is to give you help by providing information, and we also want to give you hope. We will answer your questions and give you the latest information that we have. If you'd like to submit a question about cancer to Healthline, please email us at healthline@yale.edu, or you can call 1-888-234-4YCC. We will try to answer your questions on the air in a future broadcast or today if possible.
Today, our program focuses on the role of the immune system to treat cancer. And it's my great pleasure to introduce our special guest, Dr. Richard Edelson, who is a director of the Yale Cancer Center and an international expert in the fields of immunology, immunotherapy, and the development of novel therapies for cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. Along with his research team, Dr. Edelson devised and implemented the first FDA-approved selective immunotherapy for any type of cancer, a treatment that's now referred to as transimmunization. Rick, thanks so much for joining us today on Healthline.
Ed and Ken, it's a real pleasure to be here. I'm absolutely delighted to be seeing how the show has been developing, and I'm really delighted to also share the information that I have.
Great. So let's get right into it. So Rick, just for our listening audience, how would you describe immunotherapy?
So the immune system is an enormously powerful ally that we've got in fighting disease. Most people are very comfortable with the concept that the immune system is required to defend against infection, and it's in a very elaborately evolved system with millions and millions of interchangeable active components that are controlling each other, that are activating each other, etc. But in addition to fighting infection, it's been clear for some time that the immune system can also defend against cancer.
All right, I want to ask you along those lines. I've heard people say over the years that all of us get cancer, one or two or three or 10 times in our lifetime, that our immune system is able to fight that off. What are your thoughts on that?
While we're sitting here today, we can assume that our immune system, with the T cells that are the main players in that immune system, are percolating through our tissues and defending against cancers that we will never see. The reason that we know that is highly likely to be the case is because individuals whose immune systems are compromised by treatment or simply by the fact that the system is not working properly have a very high incidence of developing certain kinds of cancers. We have to assume that those cancers occur, sometimes in very high percentages, because the immune system was simply not doing its job.
And also, I guess it's now well established that cancer cells themselves are quite brilliant and pretty nifty about trying to evade the immune system.
Cancer cells are, unfortunately, very sneaky customers, very clever in the way they do that. By the time we actually see a cancer and can diagnose it, taking the point that I made just a minute ago, the cancer cells have already evaded the immune system. So the cancer cells that we're seeing in the form of, for example, a tumor, have accumulated in significant number only because the immune system was avoided. There are a number of different ways that they can do that. One way that they can do it is to not express on their surface, this is the surface of the cancer cells themselves, the license plate that distinguishes them from normal cells. Those license plates are called antigens, but the important thing is to recognize that cancer cells can be distinguished very commonly from the normal counterparts by an immune system. But if the cancer cells if the cancer cells are no longer showing those license plates, or if the cancer cells are making chemicals which specifically camouflage those license plates, the immune system can be fooled.
Well, along those lines, how can we, how can you, because this is your area of expertise, and how can we as oncologists as well, unmask the license plates and take off the camouflage? Are there ways of doing that and turning on the immune system?
Absolutely. But the idea, as you both are indicating, is never to underestimate certainly the kind of enemy that cancer can be. So never to underestimate the challenge of doing immunotherapy, harnessing the power of the immune system after the cancer has already gotten to a point that it has a foothold. After the cancer has already gotten to the point that these cancer cells may have established their own blood supply in a site where they don't belong. So what one needs to do is to recognize the challenge and sometimes take extraordinary steps, first by making it easier and removing as much of the cancer as possible, even when you know you haven't removed it all, and now giving the immune system a smaller challenge.
Rick, are there any particular types of cancers that might be more amenable to the use of immunotherapies?
There are several. And hopefully this list will be much larger, but the experience has been most significant in a small number. Melanoma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, ovarian carcinoma, and leukemias. Those are the principal ones in which there have been significant advances that have been made.
Now, your own particular area of interest, cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, in which I think it's fair to say you are the leading expert, both in the United States and worldwide, also seems to be a disease that's treatable through this immunotherapy approach. And I'm just curious, you know, how did you decide to begin using immunotherapies for treating CTCL?
So that, as you indicated, since my career was in its very early stages, I've concentrated a lot of my effort and my group's effort, initially at the National Cancer Institute, then at Columbia University, and for the last 20 years at Yale, in investigating that disease, both as a direct enemy because it's a terribly dangerous disease, and the individuals that have it must be protected against the evolution of that disease, but also because it's a fabulous model for how to develop immunotherapies and immunodiagnosis for that can be applied to other kinds of cancer. And I just say that we developed a therapy now a number of years ago to which you referred, which has been used throughout the world. It was originally developed at Yale with the clinicians and the scientists working very closely together, and there have been over 250,000 treatments used. The important message to distill from this is that in this cancer, which is not tremendously uncommon, it's about as common as Hodgkin's disease, so perhaps 10,000 new cases a year in the country, but not amongst the most common cancers, that we learned a couple of very important things. First, the proof of principle that the immune system actually can be used to essentially vaccinate a patient after the fact of having cancer against the cancer cells, because some of these people have not only benefited, but their cancers, which were quite extensive, have disappeared with follow-ups up to 20 years. So the answer is we now know that the principles from that use of that treatment in that disease can be applied to other cancers, and we have to learn how to do that.
And in your transimmunization studies, were there any adverse side effects that patients experienced?
This is one of the most remarkable things about it. We who deal with cancer patients have come to believe from our own experience and from chemotherapy's experience that cancer treatments, in order to be effective, must carry with them very deleterious or dangerous side effects. That treatment is quite remarkable in that it hasn't happened that way. So to my knowledge, not a single patient who was under that treatment in the 150 or more centers around the world ever actually had to stop the treatment because of adverse reactions.
And I think that's really quite appealing, right, about this type of new therapeutic approach, that there really are very, very few side effects.
One of the things that we have to realize is that if the immune system is really defending us all the time against cancer, it's doing it in a way that doesn't lead usually to side effects. We've got to learn how to do what the body typically does when things get awry.
Well, we'd like to remind you to please email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu, or you can call us at 888-234-4YCC. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about the use of the immune system and immunotherapy to treat cancer with Dr. Richard Edelson, who is the director of the Yale Cancer Center.
This is a Medical Minute brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. Cancer patients become cancer survivors the first day they're diagnosed. There are over 10 million cancer survivors in the U.S., and the numbers keep growing. However, there are long-term side effects of cancer, including heart problems, osteoporosis, fertility issues, impaired growth, and an increased risk of second cancers. Ending cancer treatment can be both exciting and scary. Most people are relieved to be finished with the demands of treatment, but many also feel concerned about whether the cancer will come back and what they can do to prevent a relapse. Cancer survivors require long-term specialized care and support. For more information, log on to www.yalecancercenter.org. That address once again, www.yalecancercenter.org.
One of the things that I would like to try to get into.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTIC studios with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and Dr. Richard Edelson, who's the director of the Yale Cancer Center. And we're talking today about use of the immune system and immunotherapy in the treatment of cancer. Rick, I wanted to ask if this type of approach of using the immune system is, you know, at this point can be used in all several different types of cancer, many types of cancer, and if it can't be used in certain cancers, is that something that we can look forward to in the future?
Well, there are many different kinds of cancers, and different cancers present different kinds of challenges, depending on where they are in the body and what their particular biologic features are. So there will be cancers that are step-ups. The first kinds of cancer that you want to try novel therapies like this on are types of cancers where it's relatively easy to gain access to the cancerous cells and to evaluate whether you're getting a response. To also sample by biopsy whether the cancer is actually being attacked by the main attacking cells, the killer T cells. And you can do that by doing a biopsy, looking at it under a microscope and seeing whether the T cells are there.
Following up on that, Rick, is there any way that one can determine whether or not a patient might be able to respond to immunotherapy?
One of the important lessons that we're learning, and it's happening a lot right now in a variety of different places around the world, and particularly here at Yale, in our cancer center, where the immunology program is so closely aligned with the clinicians, is that the infiltration of the cancer by the T cells is something that's become clear to be a very important prognostic indicator. In other words, to tell you how that patient may do. For example, it's been very recently learned that in colorectal cancer, a cancer that previously was not considered a major candidate for immunotherapy, that if the tumor itself, the original tumor, is infiltrated by cytotoxic or killer T cells, the chance of metastasis or spread from that primary tumor is smaller and the survival is much better. This indicates that the immune system is working and we just have to rev it up.
Is it possible to personalize this this immune therapy to individually help a patient fight their tumor?
Ken, that's an extremely important question. Clearly, the concept of developing individualized treatments for every cancer patient previously seemed a little far-fetched. So there were approaches that were taken by immunologists to the category of cancer. Let's look for license plates or antigens that are common to melanoma. Let's look for license plates or antigens that are common to colorectal cancer. But it turns out that everybody's cancer is somewhat unique. And the best way to do it is to do exactly what you're suggesting, which is individualized. And now it turns out to actually be possible. For example, there were lessons that we learned from our own success with the therapy you're calling transhumanization that told us after the fact that that success was in large measure due to the fact that we were individualizing the therapy in the process of doing it. One can now also make antibodies or another parallel kind of molecule that we're working on at Yale called lipocalins, which may turn out to be very specific for an individual patient's cancer. These are things for the future, but maybe not for the distant future.
So not to get into too many nitty-gritty details, but can you elaborate a little bit more on what this lipocalin molecule is?
Yes. There are 10 lipocalins. These are small proteins in the body which have very important purposes. They have nothing to do at the outset with cancer at all, but it's been learned that if you could take these 10 different proteins that are normally in the body, you can make small changes in them through molecular techniques, engineering, that can actually induce or make tens of billions of different varieties of them. And there's a technique that we have highly functional at Yale called microarrays, where we can take hundreds of slides from one tissue, from one tumor, and test it from that patient against these billions of potential targeting agents. So it may be very possible to automate an approach where one characterizes an individual patient's tumor and finds precisely the arsenal to use for that patient in a relatively short time with agents that are already stockpiled.
Would you expect doing that we might get less side effects if we're able to tailor the therapy?
So let's talk about the potential side effects from immunotherapy, because I certainly don't want to leave a misimpression that there aren't any or that they aren't potentially dangerous. One of the side effects of immunotherapy is that it may not be, if one's not careful, as specific for the tumor as one would like. So one could wind up targeting the tumor and normal tissue. If you target normal tissue, you may damage normal tissue in the form of what could be called an autoimmune disease, or simply targeting a particular organ or set of cells. So one has to try to be very specific, very wary, but there are ways to screen for that.
We'd like to, again, invite you to please send us your emails at healthline@yale.edu, and we're going to take a short break to listen to a survivor's story. Please come back and join us in a few minutes to talk about cancer immunotherapy with Dr. Richard Edelson from the Yale Cancer Center.
The American Cancer Society estimates that in 2006, over 11,000 people will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer in Connecticut alone. Early detection is key. When detected early, colorectal cancer is easily treated and highly curable. Men and women over the age of 50 should have regular colonoscopies to screen for the disease. Patients with colorectal cancer have more hope than ever before. Each day, more patients are surviving the disease due to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving colorectal cancer survivors more hope than they've ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at Yale Cancer Center, Connecticut's only federally designated comprehensive cancer center, to test innovative new treatments for colorectal cancer. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to newly available medicines which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. For more information, visit our website at yalecancercenter.org.
Well, welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTIC studios with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and Dr. Richard Edelson. We're here discussing the exciting breakthroughs made in the treatment of cancer using a person's own immune system. So, Rick, while we were taking the break, you were talking about the immune system, and I've got to ask you if you could repeat how you characterized it, because the words were poetic and very exciting.
The immune system, in its various components, has as many different kinds of working parts as the brain. There are literally millions and millions of different kinds of T cells. Each, when stimulated to do its job, called up from rest, can make almost countless copies of itself in an army that then does its job if the job can be completed and then go back to rest. But what's different about the T cell and the immune system and the brain, is you have that tremendous complexity with all of its checks and balances, with all of its different subpopulations and subplots, operating as powerfully as a locomotive, but moving like a locomotive throughout the body, percolating through the tissues, not staying in one place. So it's a tremendously powerful, specific, and mobile system.
Rick, to follow up on that, again, your group has really revolutionized the role of transimmunization to treat patients with cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, but you're now expanding that therapeutic approach to treat other cancers, including lung cancer and perhaps other solid tumors. Again, perhaps if you could expand a little bit more and elaborate for our listening audience.
One of the most extraordinary things that's ever happened to me in my career was to start out with what we thought was a good idea now more than two decades ago and find out, to our surprise, as often happens in medicine, maybe more often than not, that what we accomplished far exceeded our expectations therapeutically with the initial cancer patients, and then far exceeded even our capacity to explain it. So for the last 20 years, we have been on a mission to understand that mechanism. This is where science and clinical response come together, and it's so often hard to do, but so important to do. What we learned after all those years of doing this and all the clinical responses, what we learned is that the key was a cell that was barely even recognized at the outset, so that we frankly could never have done what we did truly intelligently from the start, because we didn't know all the working parts. The cell is
so
the
dendritic
cell.
I wanted to ask you about dendritics. So what are they?
So there is a cell called a dendritic cell, which is present in the blood as only 0.1%, or 1 out of 1,000 of your white blood cells normally. It travels around in the form of another cell called a monocyte, camouflaged as a monocyte, ready if it gets into the tissues to fight infection or cancer and become a dendritic cell. These are the cells that are the ignition of the immune system. When they get ignited by the foreign substance, which could in this case be that specific molecule on a cancer, they can now trigger T-cell responses. But T-cells cannot respond, typically in the absence of that trigger. And one of the things, going back to the question you asked earlier, is why is it that cancer can fly in under the radar screen when, in fact, it can ultimately be attacked if you can put it back on the radar screen? And the answer is that a cancer cell needs to stimulate or ignite two signals in order to get a response. One of those signals comes from the dendritic cell, and one of those signals is the license plate. But a cancer cell has only one signal. It needs the dendritic cell to get things started.
And are the strategies that you and others at the Yale Cancer Center are taking to try to, you know, activate the dendritic cells to become much more effective and powerful in turning on the immune response?
So what we've learned is we can massively expand in one day the number of dendritic cells, literally hundreds of times over what one has at the outset. And we can then introduce into those dendritic cells, if we simply keep them together overnight, those new dendritic cells with the patient's damaged cancer cells. And now what happens is when they go back in the body together, now the body, under the right circumstances, can be immunized.
I want to ask you about lung cancer, because I think one of the exciting research studies that's being done at Yale has to do with using transimmunization, which is the technique that you've developed over your career in patients with lung cancer. Can you tell us a little bit about that study and how would a patient or a person with lung cancer access the Yale Cancer Center and participate?
So right now what we're doing is, as you indicate, Ken, we're doing what's called a phase 1 clinical trial. That's the earliest stage when you explore the safety and potentially some of the effect of a therapy in a small number of patients. So it's too early for me to comment on results other than to indicate that we have now been testing that therapy in a new disease, which is so-called non-small cell lung cancer, the most common type, and we are encouraged at least by the safety. The way a patient can access the study is through referral from their oncologist or internist following a diagnosis, and then to determine whether the patient is eligible for the study by seeing a Yale physician.
And again, I would encourage our listening audience, if anyone is interested in getting more information, please look at our website, yalecancercenter.org, for discussion about this transimmunization study as well as other immunotherapy trials that are being offered at the Yale Cancer Center. Rick, there's no question that the Yale School of Medicine, the Yale Cancer Center, has an exceptionally strong immunobiology program, perhaps the best not only in the United States but throughout the world. And as you discussed, there's really now closer interactions between the basic scientists and our investigators to develop, you know, innovative clinical trials. And I wonder if you could perhaps discuss what are some of the newest clinical breakthroughs that are on the horizon.
Ed, you're exactly correct. I mean, the basic immunologists and the oncologists interested in using the power of the immune system are now working hand in hand. There have been many that have been working hand in hand for a while, but it's become a much broader interaction just really in the last 3 years. The kinds of things that are going on include a clinical trial that's in the process of just beginning using a monoclonal antibody, which is a protein, a chemical, with tremendous specificity made by the immunologists to actually attack those T cells which shut down immune responses, so-called regulatory cells. And so we are in the process of getting ready to start a trial that can tremendously increase the volume, amplify the volume of the immune system by muffling the mufflers.
Rick, you've had extensive experience in devising and actually bringing forth to the clinic immune therapy really over 30 years of your career. How do you foresee the field of immunology changing the broader field of cancer research and treatment in the next decade?
We've known for a very long time that the immune system had tantalizing potential. We've known that we can protect mice against cancers very effectively for a long time. We've known the other things that we talked about before as leads, but it's only really been in the last 2 or 3 years that the tools have been available to immunologists, to cancer immunologists, to really put the whole story together. We now understand exactly why, and I'll just give you a very brief example. Dendritic cells are not a single population. There are dendritic cells that turn the immune system on, and there are dendritic cells that turn them off. You certainly want to turn it on to have an immune reaction. So you have to be able to play that instrument like a piano.
Well, we're going to stop in a couple minutes. I just want to say one of the things I most enjoyed, Rick, is in your office. You've got pictures of your patients, and I have to say it actually is it's very inspiring each time seeing people that are living many, many years and living healthy lives and after treatment with immune therapy. And it will be very exciting for all of us if that is able to help more and more patients. Anyways, I would like to thank Dr. Rick Edelson for being with us. And Rick, I want to ask you, are there one or two or three points that you'd like to leave us with and for our listening audience?
Yes. First, remember that your immune system is a powerful tool and that the future is really rosy in terms of our learning how to do this. Have your physicians stay in close contact with the frontier of medicine, medical oncology, pediatric oncology, and let's just stay in touch.
Thank you. I'd again like to thank Dr. Richard Edelson for joining us on Healthline.
If you have questions for Dr. Edelson or for Healthline, we encourage you to go to our website, yalecancercenter.org, for more information about cancer and the resources available to you. I also would like to thank you, Rick, for a terrific session. And remember, tune into WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Our next program will focus on new treatment strategies for lung cancer, and our guest at that time will be Dr. Lynn Wilson, Associate Professor of Therapeutic Radiology, and Dr. Scott Gettinger, Assistant Professor of Medical Oncology at the Yale School of Medicine. Until then, this is Dr. Ed Chu
and Dr. Ken Miller
from the Yale Cancer Center wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.